Good afternoon, honorable members.
Good afternoon, Chair.
Thank you very much for all of us who have rejoined our meeting. This is a continuation meeting of the meeting of this morning. It is a portfolio committee meeting of health of the National Assembly of South Africa. We were about to receive a presentation from the South African Health Products Regulatory Authority, and we are hoping, I am hoping that all the members would have joined. I am looking at the participant list, and it seems like we have a continuation of our forum of this morning to continue with our meeting. I am going to welcome the representatives of SAHPRA to our meeting. I note the CEO of SAHPRA is on the platform, is in the meeting, Dr. Boitumelo Semete Makopotlela. And the chairperson of the board of SAHPRA, Professor Helen Rees, was on an urgent discussion which she had to participate on in the last 5 minutes, and I'm hoping that she has joined and that she will be joining us if she has not joined yet. But I will hand over to the CEO to introduce the team that is with her.
This meeting is being recorded.
You are all very welcome to this meeting, and we look forward to your presentation on the APP and the budget of the financial year 2022-2023. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. The board chair says she's in the lobby, so if she could be let in, I think she may be struggling there. I hope you can hear me.
We can hear you well. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you again, honourable members, for inviting us to this meeting this afternoon, and thanks for accommodating the schedule. On the meeting with us, we have the executive management team of SAHPRA, as well as board members of SAHPRA that have joined us for this presentation this afternoon. And if I could just introduce them, and we have some new board members to the SAHPRA board. So I'll ask our board members to introduce themselves. The management team is still largely the same. So we have with us our deputy chair, Dr. Ubakeng Masondo. If you could introduce yourself, please.
Thank you to me. Thank you, honorable members. Dr. Ubakeng, as Boitumelo has said, and I sit in as the deputy chair for SAHPRA. Thank you, honorable members, for the invitation.
Thank you so much. And then we've got Advocate Hasina Kasim.
Good afternoon. Honourable members, apologies for the slight delay. I'm having difficulty with one of my links. I'm a member of the board, of the SAHPRA board. I've been nominated in my legal capacity, and thank you all for allowing us the opportunity here today.
Thank you, Hasina. And we've got Ms. Didaba.
Good morning. Sorry, good afternoon. I'm so sorry. Somebody just decided to call right at the time when I'm trying to introduce myself. My name is Ditaba Maraka, and I'm a board member. Thank you very much. Thanks, Jimmy.
Thank you. I think we've got Mr. Rato. Much time.
To me, I'm also here, but I'm having trouble connecting on my computer, so I'm connecting via phone at the moment. But please go ahead.
Okay, thank you, Helen. We're just introducing the board members. I think we have Lerato on the call also.
Good afternoon. This is Lerato. My apologies. I'm battling with my camera because of load shedding and bandwidth. Lerato Mutai, member of the board of SAPRA. Thank you.
Thank you. And we have Mr. Itani. Itani, are you able to introduce yourself? He may be dealing with bandwidth, Chair. I'll hand over to the board chair. Maybe she has some opening remarks before we go into the presentation of our strategic plan and our APP.
Thank you very much. So I'm doing it on my phone. I'm still trying. Oh, I think I might be in now. But I think the load shedding is affecting everybody, so with apologies. Thank you very much for giving us this time and also for accommodating particularly my calendar today. I really appreciate it. And we look forward to presenting. I think overall, as you've seen, we have new colleagues on the board. We've got old colleagues, which is great for continuity, and newer colleagues on the board who are definitely very rapidly learning the ropes. And I'm delighted to see some of them are joining this discussion to get the sense of the kind of questions that Parliament is interested in. Clearly, I mean, just to say that, you know, that we've said this before, SAPRA remains an incredibly important regulatory body. And I think we've said before, if ever perhaps even at a community level, people didn't.
This meeting is being recorded.
I think we can be pretty confident that we're making progress. And in particular, one of our ambitions is to get what's called a maturity level from the World Health Organization. This is something that the WHO is now doing. They also recognize the importance of having capable, competent regulatory authorities worldwide, and not just in the Northern Hemisphere. And so they have developed a way of assessing the level of experience and ability that a regulator has. And we're in the process of doing that, and we'll be getting what's called a maturity level awarded to us later on this year. Because of time, I'll hand over straight away to Dr. Sametti, and she will make the presentation. But thank you very much for your time.
Sorry, can I give you 15 minutes for that presentation?
Certainly, thank you. Thank you so much for that. Thank you. And just to say, we've been asked to come and present to the Portfolio Committee our revised strategic plan, as well as our annual performance plan for the financial year 2023. I must say, we look forward to coming back to present to you our annual report for the 2021-22 financial year as soon as the audit is finalized. We are currently busy with the audit by the Auditor General of South Africa. So the presentation then will largely focus on the strat plan as well as the performance plan for the 2022-23 financial year. And also we have our CFO on the call, who will take us through the financial budget as per the MTF framework. I think Helen already alluded to the importance of the regulator, and I think now as we're responding to COVID, this was highlighted, particularly the importance of ensuring that the regulator remains to be evidence-based in making its decision to ensure that it can guarantee the health and the wellness of both human as well as animal health in the country, as this is core to our mandate. Also, As we continue to mature as an organization, if you remember, we've been newly established as a Schedule 3A public entity since 2018. And so our focus has really been on ensuring that from a governance perspective, you know, we set up all the policies, systems and processes, but also while we do so, to ensure that we continuously build in mechanisms for efficiency so that we can effectively provide our function of monitoring, evaluation, regulation, investigation, as well as inspection and registration of health products, but also including oversight for clinical trials, as well as medical devices and in vitro diagnostic tests. So our scope is quite broad, and as we implement our mandate, the governance elements remain to be quite important. Also, you know, we continue, as I said earlier, to ensure that as we are re-engineering our processes and as we support the country, particularly in its efforts around the COVID-19 pandemic, we needed to ensure that we remain true to our mandate, which is safety, quality, and efficacy of health products. As already alluded to, we're quite excited that we have a new board. As Safra, the previous board's term ended in September of 2021, and as at October 2021, we have a new newly appointed board. This board does constitute members who are reappointed, as well as new members. Specifically, in this meeting, we have Dr. Obakeng, who is our newly appointed vice chairperson, as well as Mr. Daba Maraka, who's a newly appointed member and currently chairs our HR REMCO. So we believe that we've got a very good mix of new members and those who are reappointed, but also those who have the required technical expertise to ensure that as a regulator, we continue to execute our mandate as per the Medicines Act. And this is just a picture of all our board members, as I've indicated, that have been newly appointed. Very important also is the legislative mandates that we anchor our work on, the Constitution being one of them, the National Health Act, but more specifically the Medicines and the Related Substances Act. And to mention that we have started a project to review this act. You will note that it was last amended in 2017, and there are specific sections within the act that do require revision. And so we have started this process with the Department of Health, and in the next coming months or so, it will then be tabled through yourselves in Parliament for consideration. The Hazardous Substances Act also similarly, this is an act that guides our work in the area of radiation control, wherein we have regulatory oversight for products that are non-ionizing radiation emitting devices, or our radioactive nuclides. And also, as SAPRA has incorporated the function of radiation control, this act needs to also be amended to ensure that there is alignment with the Medicines Act, as well as the nuclear regulator, the Nuclear Regulation Act. So those are the two substantive acts that guide what we do, but also that are currently undergoing review. There's many others as our work impacts in other areas, such as the veterinary sector. So we continuously ensure that there is consideration of developments with those acts or amendments, but also as we effect our mandate, we work with a number of stakeholders who have oversight and implement these various acts. We cannot stress this enough, that as a regulator, we have three
followed simple from this 3 points, please. I just would like to know, where are the notes?
I'm just expanding on these 3 points, Honourable Member, just to give a sense of what we mean. Thank you.
But we would appreciate it if what you are reading is also given to us. We read with you to understand
it. Noted, thank you.
Through you, Chair.
So,
Thank you. Please continue, Dr. Chemete.
Thank you. So on quality, again, this is where we look at the quality of the product, that when it is either imported or exported, does it comply with good quality practices? And we constantly monitor every batch that is then availed into the country. In terms of efficacy, this is where we look at, does the product do what it claims to do? And these principles apply for all health products that SAHPRA would oversee. I'll now go to present on the strategic plan. And this plan chair was presented to the portfolio committee when we developed it, and we've made some revisions, and I'll talk to those revisions. And specifically, they speak to the outcome indicators. They speak to our five-year targets, as well as how we calculate our technical indicator descriptors. Okay. So briefly, in terms of our targets, this is for a strategic plan until 2024-25. So speaking to our five-year targets. And in terms of the outcomes, the first was around effective financial management. If you remember, when SAHPRA was just established and with our first audit of 2019-2020, we had a qualified audit opinion, and our five-year target was that by 2023-24, we would have a clean audit opinion. As I mentioned, we are currently busy with the audit for the 21-22 financial year, and we will then come back to the committee on the outcome of that audit. From a revenue perspective, we intend to be financially sustainable. We do receive a portion of our income from National Treasury, the National Treasury allocation, but also we generate revenue through fees that we charge, and our CFO will speak to that. But the point to be highlighted here, and we expand on it in the later slide, is the need for the regulator to receive continuous financial support, particularly to capacitate the regulator as we execute our function, as well as we need to digitize our operations. But we go into a bit of detail in the next slides on that. In terms of stakeholder engagement, and this was highlighted quite significantly as we were supporting the COVID response, we had to engage with a range of stakeholders, media, the public, et cetera. And it highlighted the need for us to continuously understand the stakeholder needs and to address those that are within our mandate. And so we do have surveys that we run on every 2 years. And what we would then do is capture the recommendations. And the intention is that our five-year target would be that 100% of those recommendations that we have accepted, that we would have implemented those. Again, very important to us as a regulator, our human capacity. Our intention is that we will attract and retain superior talent within the organization, particularly in our core business. You will note when we present some numbers in the later slides that we are extremely undercapacitated. And so we need to ensure that when we do attract talent, we're able to retain that talent, but also to ensure that we have a positive working environment, particularly as we go through this change of being a 3A entity from being a directorate within the Department of Health. ICT remains an important enabler to how we operate, and we do intend to digitize our operations. There are parts of our operations that are digitized, but the intention is to have an integrated regulatory information management system, which we have scoped and we have costed. And again, as we talk around our needs that we will speak to later, this is one area where we do need support, and we need financial support to be able to implement the regulatory information management system. In terms of really our core business, which is the regulatory function, we want to ensure that we operate with high levels of efficiency and effectiveness. And so we have targets within that. And the first the first target speaking to the backlog, which by the time we reach the five-year target, this would be cleared. That we intend to improve and show that we operate as per international
This meeting is being recorded.
Being a well-established regulator that has got world-class quality management systems with processes that are quite stringent and a regulator that others can rely on. That is what we are aspiring to achieve after this audit. We have the World Health Organization that will be coming in May, June for the final audit. And our plan is that by 2024, 2025, we would then be at maturity level four, which is the highest level. And this is where other regulators like Singapore, like the FDA, are at level four because they've got very advanced systems and we believe that we can achieve that. The next targets speak to our area of inspection, particularly around manufacturing practices and warehousing practices. This is quite important that all the establishments in the country are licensed and are compliant with good manufacturing practices. So we, our intention is to have those concluded within 125 working days. In the area of humane clinical trial applications, again, we have stretched ourselves here in that we want to complete and finalize these within 90 days. We have seen that with COVID, this is certainly achievable. We worked hard really to ensure that we support and we ensure that we review and make decisions quite speedily on clinical trials conducted in the country. And then the last one speaks to medical devices, which is a new area. We've published the regulations, we've got comments from industry, and we're currently dealing with those comments. I'll then speak to the annual performance plan for the 2022-23 financial year. For this financial year, we have 27 targets, and some may say that it's a lot, but you know, as a newly established entity, there's quite a number of targets that are of priority, and I think once we are mature and established and we've got proper systems in place, some of these may fall off onto our operational plan from the APP, but we believe that it's important that we keep yourself as well as our board abreast on these quite important targets within the regulator. Of these 27, we've got about 70% that are related to our core business and 30% related to our support functions. So in terms of the support and leadership functions, our KPIs for this current year that started now in April speak to the audit, which I've already alluded to the income that we would like to generate, as well as the bottom line that we would like to have. Also, we, from a stakeholder engagement, will continue to monitor this and ensure that we deliver on the recommendations that we have highlighted. We are undergoing a change management process as an organization, and we'll continue to have interventions that we implement. Important is also from a workplace skills plan perspective, in that we have identified specific skill sets that we need to train our staff on and expose them on. And so we have developed a workplace skills plan based on our training needs. And what will then happen is that on an annual basis, we will implement this. And then lastly, it speaks to being able to capacitate the organization on an annual basis. We go through an exercise of looking at the budget and saying how many positions we can fill. However, we do recognize that we are not adequately capacitated for the amount of work that we have. And so, you know, there are various efforts that we have put in place to support that. We recently had a discussion about 2 weeks ago with the National Treasury, you know, requesting for further funding to enable us to better capacitate the organization. And so we will continue with those efforts. They've asked us to engage with the DG at the Department of Health as well as the CFO to ensure that these specific initiatives that we need support with are catered for in their budget, and those discussions will take place. From a regulatory function perspective, as I've indicated, you know, we want to clear the backlog in this financial year. I've just put a picture on the side that indicates that when we started in 2019 with the backlog, we had about 1,354 master applications that we needed to have registered. As of April this year, we're sitting at 385. So we're slowly churning through the backlog project, and our plan is to complete that at the end of this year. Our plan is also to ensure that we don't build, you know, build a backlog in our business as usual. So efforts to re-engineer our processes are quite important. And so we have targets around that to ensure that we complete our assessment within the specified timeframes as indicated in the target 11 and 12 on this slide. Being a regulator, it's important that we are compliant with international best practices. And from that perspective, we aim to have an ISO certification for the work that we do by end of this financial year, and also to ensure that we reach maturity level 3. As I've indicated, WHO will be coming in May, June for this. And with the ISO certification, we've already had our own internal audit and are addressing some of those findings. The third area that I'd like to speak to is around inspectorate and regulatory compliance. I've already alluded to this, that this is the function wherein we go out and we inspect clinical trial sites. We would inspect manufacturing sites, we inspect warehousing sites to make sure that they're compliant. And those who are setting up these sites need to ensure that they are licensed by the regulator. So that's the first part, they have to be licensed. But also once they're licensed, from a regulatory compliance, we go out and we inspect that they're still compliant with that. And those that we are made aware of that they are not compliant, we will go out and inspect the facility. A number of you may have heard about products that were being sold in a facility that was non-compliant in the Western Cape area. About 2 weeks ago, we sent our team to go and inspect that facility. We would typically work with the South African Police Services to ensure that those who are in breach of the Medicines Act, there is then due processes followed. And these are just pictures that demonstrate some of the non-compliant sites that we see and that we then deal with then the perpetrators in this regard. So being able to license the facilities within the required timeframes becomes important. Being able to issue import and export permits within the required timeframes is also quite important. And wherein there's an investigation based on what has been reported to us, being able to conclude that timely is important, and hence we have those targets. The fourth area to speak to is our clinical and pharmaceutical evaluation. This is where we make decisions, as I've indicated, in terms of clinical trial applications, as well as safety reports that we get for products. I think we have reported, and when we come back with our annual report, we'll share more around how we've been monitoring reports for COVID-19 vaccines, for any adverse effects following immunization. We need to look at those reports, and we need to make sure that we finalize the review of those reports. We have also noted, as we're responding to COVID, that there's a lot of awareness that we need to focus on and educate the public on how to report any adverse events that they are experiencing, and how to report any non-compliance by those who are making making these products available. So our plan is that we will continuously have safety awareness webinars on a quarterly basis. We've done a lot more now around COVID, and the work is that the intention is that we would expand this to focus into other therapeutic areas. And then KPI 22, which speaks to the quality of the product, is that for all the biologicals and vaccines that are made available in the country, that we would finalize the lot release. And lot release is when the product is imported into the country before it's made available. It goes through our lab. They test it to make sure that it's compliant from a quality perspective. And this applies to all the vaccines available in the country, not only COVID, but all the EPI vaccines. And then lastly, it's around medical devices and radiation control. This is an area that has been incorporated, the radiation control incorporated into SAHPRA, and we started having regulatory oversight in the area of medical devices since 2017. And again, with the facilities that make the that manufacture the medical devices, we need to ensure that they are licensed, and we must make those decisions within the timeframes indicated here. We need to ensure that we also have guidelines for the registration of these products, and also to ensure that the facilities are adequately authorized in the area of radionuclides. Lastly, we are in discussions with the National Nuclear Regulator on a co-regulation model in this area of radiation control, because there are products that fall within their mandate and those that remain to be under SAHPRA's mandate. And so we will have a clearly articulated core regulation model. And so those are our targets for the year that started now in April. I will now hand over to Rehan, our CFO, to take us through the finances.
Thank you, CEO, and good afternoon. The slide here presents our MPF projections for 22-23 to 24-25. What I want to highlight here is just the total revenue for 22-23, 349 million. You'll see slight decrease from the prior year projections and a slight increase in 23-24, mainly affected by the backlog revenue projects envisioned to end in 23-24. And similar to the expenditure, the backlog reduction project expenditure relating to that income that is deferred. Also, what I want to highlight on this slide is other income. So we did a separate line item for that just to show the additional income we envision or project to generate from our current revenue streams relating to mainly to biological testing and medical device regulation. That we're going to need through fee increases or new revenue streams to ensure that we have and maintain the status quo in terms of our overall funding projections. The next slide will deal just in a little bit more detail in terms of the explanations for the amounts. So we can move to the next slide. So you will see that we have a year-on-year decrease, percentage decrease in terms of our operational grant received. This does place a little bit of pressure on our overall funding for the years projected. Our own revenue generation has increased significantly compared to the prior financial years, but will and is projected to plateau over the MTF period. The increases are mainly due to the new fee gazette that was issued in December 2020. The increase in own revenue generation was mainly utilized for filled for planned vacancies that we had, and also the operational and capital expenditure to support the employment of new staff. Backlog deferred revenue, estimated remaining portion of the deferred revenue relating to backlog applications to be completed. The 22-23 financial year is projected to be the final year of the project. The project is mainly funded through a combination of the initial grant received from National Treasury, application payments received from industry, that's the deferred portion we carry over, and then also external funding. Estimated additional expenditure that we do require to see this project to completion for the next, for this financial year, is around 6 million, and we are currently engaging external funders to obtain the additional funds. We also see interest revenue derived from investments, mainly in the Reserve Bank Corporation of Public Deposit accounts, and the higher interest rates projected is mainly due to the cash held as industry do pay in advance, and then these funds are utilized or released into the income statement once services are rendered. The other income part is what I've touched on before, the additional revenue that we will require to maintain the status quo, and it mainly relates to lot release fees and new medical device registration fees. And we need to implement those increases by 5th of April, 2023. On the next slide. So in the MTF projections and comparison to prior years, we see a significant increase in cost of employment. So we were able to fill 55 vacancies from or since 1st of April, 2021. Available funds to fill the full structure of SAPRA will decrease over the MTF period as the revenue projections, as the total would only be inflationary related. Based on the MTF projections, SAPRA will only be able to fill a limited number of vacancies for the 22-23 financial year, around about 31 positions, costed at 14 million rand for the year, prorated, meaning that they are spread over the financial year to stretch the cost of filling those vacancies. So basically also to fill the remaining positions, we estimate that it will take a bit more than 5 years to fill or achieve a full structure for SAPRA. We'll see a reduction in office rentals, mainly due to the budgets being aligned to contractors awarded. The contracted services line relates to laboratory testing by the South African National Control Laboratory for biological products. And you'll see also a reduction in operational expenditure, mainly due to prioritization of filling of vacant positions. Our capital expenditure mainly relates to procurement of additional software products to assist with the regulatory process, and also tools of trade for the vacancies we envision to fill in the new financial year. Just an analysis of our revenue, and you'll see quite the significant increases that we've seen from the 2021 financial year, overall 86.3 million projected for the 21-22 financial year to 158 million, and then also 170 million for the new financial year. Program 2, which is our HPA unit, accounts for 53% of our revenue generated, mainly impacted through product registration fees and new medicine registrations. Program 3 relates to our inspectorate units. Budget assumptions were adjusted for 22-23. We realigned a further work program and average hours for completion and the charge rates for the inspectorate. Program 4, main revenue contributions relate to clinical trial evaluations, that's the CEM, and post-registration amendments and biological testing, BEM. Program 5 deal mainly with our medical device licenses and retention fees, and we also envision medical device registrations to be implemented during the fourth quarter, with a little bit of an increase projected for the new financial year. The next slide shows just in the pie charts how we've aligned our budgets. The red line showing the 2021 actual revenue, the purple line, the budgeted for revenue for that following year, and then orange and green in terms of projections for 21-22 and budget for 22-23. So program two, we do foresee an increase in that revenue line as the HPO or new administration applications and evaluations, we envision to see some of those being completed in the new financial year. Program three, in terms of the adjustment made to the budget projections. Program four, a little bit reduction in terms of our projections, as we've seen a windfall in applications in the current financial year and estimated to have a plateau in the new financial years. As for program four and program five, we do foresee the increase in terms of our product registrations for medical devices. The next slide shows the percentage allocation per program in terms of our overall budget. You'll note 67% of the budget has been allocated to our core programs, which is program 2-5, and 33% to administration. Program two, you'll just see the decrease in goods and services, and that's mainly due to the backlog projects. The expense allocation was against program two, and then the decrease in that expenditure from 23-24 going forward. The next slide, just want to touch on our key budget constraints. I've touched on the less than inflation increase or reduction in increases, or overall increases in our operational grant. Furthermore, as of 2022, SAPRO had 153 vacancies. The estimated cost to fill these vacancies, once off, will amount to 111 million per annum. And this is funding that SAPRO don't have to have a fully structured and staff complement within SAPRO. SAPRO also requires electronic application system or regulatory information management system to enable the adequate recording, tracking, allocation of resources, and storing of supporting documents to eliminate process inefficiencies and increase application process turnaround. The initial estimates that we have to develop or procure such a system amounts to 37.5 million to develop and maintain over a 2-year period. Also, other software or various software modules that requires integration with the system, such as pharmacovigilance and the UN Organized Crime Division software, will also, and that estimate is about 7.7 million for installation setup over a 3-year period. The year-on-year deferred revenue has increased with about 19 million, and that indicates the inability of SAPRO to timelessly process application and recognize revenue due to the capacity constraints and inefficiencies, as our processes are basically driven by manual processes, and it's not able to accommodate the large volumes of applications and data that we do deal with on a daily basis. SAPRO requires additional financial support, as the CEO has touched on, from NDOH and National Treasury to make sure that the entity can be fully capacitated and on par with other regulators in terms of our systems to enable us to improve our efficiency and effectiveness and reduce our deferred income with our overall turnaround times. Thank you, CEO. I can hand over to you.
Thank you, Ahmad. And just to conclude, Chair, you know, as we still are in the midst of COVID-19 response, we will continue to support the country, ensure that our processes are agile and flexible to ensure an accelerated response and fast-track review of that are submitted to the regulator. We will continuously also be working towards re-engineering our processes to ensure that we are effective and efficient as a regulator. And as highlighted, digitization is critical to drive efficiency within the organization. I think a very important element is our partnerships, international partnerships with other regulators and the WHO that assisted us a lot as we were supporting the COVID response, in that we could access their reports that enabled us also to review their considerations and be able to then accelerate our review mechanisms. We will continue to strengthen these partnerships, including partnerships with other regulators on the African continent. You may be aware that we now have the African Medicines Agency that has been established. So even though South Africa has not ratified the treaty, we have been participating in these various fora, and some of them were in the steering committee, etc. And so I think our position on the continent continues to be a strong one, and we will continue to support them those efforts of strengthening regulation. Lastly, as the country also works towards vaccine manufacturing, we have been working with the respective stakeholders to ensure that they are adequately set up in ensuring that their manufacturing sites and the products that will then be coming out of there would comply with safety, quality, and efficacy requirements. We will pause here, Chair. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, CEO, Dr. Demete, your Chair, Professor Ellen Rees, and your CFO, for the presentation and the rest of your team. Honorable members, we have completed the presentation. I have a list of names of members who want to ask some and raise some questions with you. It's Honorable Clark, Ismail, Tembekwayo, Chirwa, Gela, Ava, Zuela, Wilson, and Munyai. Honorable Clark, Ismail, Tembekwayo, Chirwa, Gela, Ava, Zuela, Wilson, Munyai. In that order, please, honorable members. Please be mindful that we are hoping to be completed by 5 o'clock. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable Ismail has just asked me if she could go first because she has to prepare for her breakfast, if you don't mind, Chair, if that's okay with you.
Yes, you will. You're welcome. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair, and good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for the opportunity, and thank you for the presentation. I just have a few questions. How many COVID-19-related products, PPE treatment or vaccines has SAHPRA processed? How many were approved and how many were rejected? If they were rejected, please can you advise on what reasons? My second question, as the country's regulatory body, what role is SAHPRA playing in supporting local vaccine production? My third question, what percentage of new molecular entities and generics, respectively, are currently being registered within the targeted periods? Can SAHPRA please share with the committee informing us regarding adverse events following immunization? How many cases were reported and their severity? You know, how many people actually claimed from the COVID-19 vaccine injury no-fault compensation scheme? If you could give us a breakdown of this information. And on what basis were they actually, justified or not? The Supreme Court of Appeal has recently ruled that regulations dealing with complementary medicines are invalid. Now, how does this affect consumers and manufacturers? As a regulatory body, what is your input on that? And my last question. Please update the committee on SAHPRA's current business accommodation or premises, as well as how did the lockdown affect the entity's operations. I think this is very important so that we know, this entity is very, very important. And how are you going to be managing going further? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. What are the reasons for the vision, mission, and values of the entity not being inserted into their APPs? Two, backlogs for registration of medicines have been a major challenge. What plans have been implemented in order to fast-track such backlogs, and how effective have these strategies been? 3, what is the current average waiting time for the registration of products? What is the average target that SAHPRA is working towards to achieve this objective? What plans are in place for 2022 to ensure this objective is reached? 4, on Program 5, Medical Devices and Radiation Control, there has been a significant decrease of new application licenses for radionuclide authorities issued within 30 days, from 70% to 50%. What were the reasons for such a decrease? 5, what are the reasons for the overview of SAHPRA's budget and medium-term expenditure framework estimates being left out of the APP? And then for 2022-23, there's a real decrease in the budget of minus 41.2%. This is a significant decrease. In what way will this negatively impact SAHPRA's operations and objectives with clearing approval backlogs? What plans does SAHPRA have to mitigate this reduced budget while still trying to meet its objectives? And in what ways will this decrease impact new technology and innovations? And lastly, what is the current vacancy rate at SAHPRA? What plans are in place to fill these vacancies? Thank you, Chair. That's all from me.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks for SAHPRA's presentation. In connection, a mention was made of a positive shift. And my question is, it was said that the entity is growing into maturity. What are the principles of your positive shift? And how does it support enabling working condition? That's the first one. And the second one, the presenter mentioned that the World Health Organization, the maturity level of 4 was obtained. What are the positives or the advantages of this level? And the third one, the 3 pillars of implementing mandate, the one that the presenter was talking about and did not in actual fact include that important information to say, can we please be given the, can you send us the notes on those 3 pillars? Because the very same important aspect has been included under a conclusion. So we need to refer to that so that when you come and present next time, you are able to be well informed on those aspects. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you to SAHPRA for their presentation. I also have a few questions here. Firstly, I want to know how many COVID-19 related products, tests, personal protection equipment, treatment or vaccines has SAHPRA processed so far, and how many were approved and how many were rejected. Number 2, why does the administration receive the largest portion of their budget as opposed to, for example, Programs 2 and 4, which deal with medicine registration and the backlog? And number 3, I want to get an update from SAHPRA on the Phindile Mncube situation that I had raised with them over a year ago on Johnson & Johnson surgical mesh and transversional mesh issues that we've raised countless times in this portfolio committee. How far, because they had said they will investigate and look into it. Can I just find out how far the investigation is and what has happened since to date, a year later? And number 3, in regards to the adjustment of ivermectin use, because SAHPRA had said something along those lines a while back that they will adjust the use of ivermectin use based on available evidence. Can you get an update on this? You touched a bit on it, but I didn't really get what the update was in regards to what has been the evidence so far, what has been the analysis and the research that has been done by SAHPRA so far. And I also want to find out about the anti-COVID pill. If you can give us more information how this assists in the fight against COVID and if it's readily available in South African pharmacies and hospitals. and what the process of acquiring that particular medication or treating COVID with it, or the symptoms of COVID with it, is. And I also want to find out about the outcomes of their talks with Pfizer over the leaked document on adverse effects. Has it had any impact on how you had initially read its safety level and approved it on that information and on that basis, which was incomplete information? What's the severity of that particular situation, and what has been done, or what have been the actions of SAHPRA regarding this issue? Have you strengthened monitoring on persons who received the Pfizer vaccine, especially citing that you also note that not efficient public education has been done on reporting adverse effects? What has been your intervention as an entity in this regard? I also want to know how many reports have they received so far citing or concerning adverse effects of vaccination. These are not investigated, just reports or grievances that they've received so far, the number of that. And I think there's a member who touched on this particular issue, but I want to find out from SAHPRA what the matter was regarding the alleged attempt by SAHPRA to shut down the national health product industry. What was SAHPRA's intention of wanting to regulate natural medicines? Which medicines are these exactly, and why they need to regulate them? And also, what are the court outcomes concerning this attempt by SAHPRA? And also, I want to know for what benefits, like who does it benefit when you now want to regulate the use of vitamin C? Thank you so much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me welcome the presentation from SAHPRA, and we really support you, SAHPRA. We are behind you for the good work that you are doing for the country. I've got few questions that I want to ask. My first question, the South African Health Products Regulatory Authority has played a significant role in the fight against the coronavirus pandemic. What lessons has the entity learned from the experience of the pandemic? And what system or process improvement will be infused into the operations of SAHPRA? My second question, what is the problem situation the enterprise architecture will address, and how will low implementation on workplace skills plan impact the entity and its workers? My third question.
Can you
there's
a scratching noise in the background, wherever that is. If it can, whoever, on whatever platform or area that is, maybe to have a look at stopping that noise. Thank you. Please.
Okay, Chair. I don't know whether have you captured my question, Chair. My third question, one of the provisions provided by the Medicines and Related Subsistence Act of 1965, as amended, is the ability to enter into agreements to cooperate with any regulatory authority in order to achieve the object of the Act. Which internally authorities has the entity reached agreements with as a result of the coronavirus pandemic response? And if such agreements exist, how will this enhance or improve licensing turnaround period? Lastly, Chair, has the entity been working and cooperation with regulatory bodies of BRICS countries, and what outcomes have been realized? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and also welcome the team from SAHPRA for the presentation. Just have four questions. First one, how does the entity ensure awareness on illicit medicine products in the market and expired medicines? And is the entity response adequate to responding to the problem? Second one, what problem is the entity implementing in creating systems for indigenous knowledge systems and their promotion? Third one, how many device establishment license applications does the entity receive annually? Last one, what have been the drivers for the rapid increase of revenue of the medical devices and IVDs, including radiation control and what growth potential does it have? Thank you.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Let me also welcome the presentation. Can you hear me, Chair? Hello?
I can hear you. Thank you. Please continue.
Thank you, Chair. I have got a few questions to ask. The first one is, what are the benefits and threats of agreement with other regulatory authorities internationally? The second question, on regulatory compliance investigation reports, what type of negative finding does SAPRA find and what action does the entity undertake to ensure compliance, and what are the penalties? What penalties are applied where applicable? The third one, the overall targets of Program 3 on the indicator of inspectorate and regulatory compliance targets being 70% and below reflects the lack of capacity to deliver 100% as per performance standard of the outcome indicator. What are the limitations and what interventions will be required to perform optimally as inspectorate and regulatory compliance are also at the heart of the mandate of SAPRA? Lastly, Chair, what challenges confront the entity in the main on its inspection and what threats exist and how are they being addressed? Thank you, Chair President.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to SAPRA for your presentation. In the main, my questions are answered. I just have two that perhaps you could help me with. The first one is, so people who've now had very bad reactions or have suffered personal damages from the vaccine may now apply for funding against a fund that was established for that. We are hearing from people who've applied that they're now being told, no, it wasn't as a result of the vaccine. Can you give me some idea of what the process is that's being followed here? And how does one go about proving whether or not it was the result of the vaccine or not? It's very easy to say it wasn't as a result of the vaccine. We even had somebody who has been severely disabled straight after the vaccine shot. So perhaps you can help me in those lines. And then I want to deal particularly with machinery. And I'm talking about imaging machines that are used by forensic laboratories, etc. Is that controlled or investigated by SAPRA? You know, machineries and articles of machineries and equipment that go into labs, theaters, dentist rooms. And my question on that is based on information that we are receiving that in one of the forensic laboratories, machines were delivered some time ago. Number one, they don't work in the South African context. Number two, we don't have sufficient people in this country who are qualified to work them in the first place. So if you could just give me an idea what your involvement is around the monitoring and use of medical equipment that is brought into the country. I thank you.
Honorable Munyer. Honorable Munyer.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I think I should welcome SAPRA's presentation. But I just want to ask a very simple question. Did SAPRA, firstly, I must congratulate you firstly for being firm from against intimidation for political to produce and political outcome. I congratulate you for firmness, and please don't be influenced by us politicians. Please, science must also, scientific outcome should also guide you in our work within your mandate. Lastly, I want to ask the regulator. I think they used to have a huge challenge. There used to be a challenge before. They seem to be going to stabilize. They have stabilized. And I think now it seems stabilization to maturity. That point I like a lot, because we understood the old MCC, what it used to be. And we knew they built this organization out of very difficult position to be what it is now. So for me, Chair, before I ask the question, what kind of support, because I know resource is not endless, what extra resource do you want the portfolio really to advocate for them to make sure that they do their work successfully and independently, in the independence? Thank you.
Thank you, members. Have I left anyone out? If I have not, I have a number of questions for you, CEO, and for your team. The first one deals with your revenue collection or projection for inspectorate regulations and compliance. And I want to know why it has decreased in the current year projections and the outer years, while you had experienced an increased revenue collection before. The second one has to do with your development of performance indicators to reduce deferred revenue. As this reflects a major and critical lack of capacity to create efficiency and effectiveness, is that what I see, or is the entity, I understand the entity is supposed to be developing those performance indicators? And then how is the entity yourselves working with the Department of Science and Innovation and its entities as their mandate of a strategic alignment? What is the training capacity of SAPRA, and how many graduates are trained annually, and what skill development contributions does the entity make to institutions of higher learning and education? What are the plans of SAPRA to support the department on the development of a functional and effective state pharmaceutical company that we know as Ketla-Perla? And what regulatory intervention can the entity develop to promote domestically manufactured medicines and devices? And does the country have the capacity and capability to grow its domestic production? Lastly, another question about regulations. How can regulations be developed to encourage transformation of the value chain of medicine and medical device manufacturing sectors? Thank you very much. Those are all of the questions from the honorable members. You can please respond to those. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. And I'll ask my colleagues for sure to come in when I'm done on the COVID product, as well as the CFO will come in and our executive for HR. Just to say, Chair, that some of these numbers, we may not have them to the T because we are still to come back to you with our annual report that will reflect a lot on the COVID numbers and the targets, etc. So because we were requested to that plan and the APP, we did not include those, but we will attempt to respond to these questions where we can get those numbers in the making. But we'll definitely cover it when we bring the annual report. The question on COVID products, my colleague Portia will speak to that. I just want to reflect on the question around local manufacturing and whether the country has capacity. I think three members asked that question. So in terms of our role in supporting local entities, we we've been doing this for a while, where we are engaging with them, and a number of them need to be made aware of what the regulatory requirements are. And so we have been a lot more open, I think, in terms of engaging with applicants. We've also created mechanisms for what we call pre-submission meetings, wherein before they can submit to us, we can meet with them and indicate what the regulatory requirements are. For COVID, for example, a vaccine called Sinopharm that we authorized was brought in by one of the local entities that we met with prior to their submission, and we took them through what the regulatory requirements are. Whether the country has capacity, we do believe that if we look at the sites that we have authorized and the discussions that we're having, we do think that there is definitely some pockets wherein capacity can be built. There was a question around our work with the DSI. So we engage a lot with the DSI, particularly around these areas of manufacturing. You may be aware that with COVID diagnostic tests, we authorized quite a number of locally manufactured COVID tests, one of them being a PCR and one of them being an antigen test, locally manufactured. So, you know, we certainly are quite cognizant of engaging with local entities. It must also be clear that as a regulator, there's only so much we can do, because we're the ones who are to ensure that these companies are compliant. So while we advise and we provide some recommendation, our role can be limited in terms of supporting local entities. But certainly from an awareness perspective, we do so. We have also had discussions with the BE Commissioner. I think this is one of the questions that was also raised. We've had a discussion with the BEE Commission, and they have advised us in terms of what we need to do to ensure that we are compliant with the BEE legislation. And we've been in discussions and have made a submission to the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition. As I think we've indicated in the past, that the Medicines Act, as indicated, as currently as it stands, it is silent on matters of BE. And hence, this is one of the elements that we're looking at as we are, looking at an overhaul and reworking the Medicines Act, as I've already alluded to earlier. So that speaks to the questions. I think we've got three or four questions around the local manufacturing. I'll now speak to questions we got around COVID vaccine safety. We've had a number of webinars that we have engaged the public on and various stakeholders. We have educated the public in terms of how to report, what mechanisms are there for reporting. We currently have a microsite that all of you can access. It's on our website. It indicates what adverse events following immunization have been reported. It even goes into detail to explain, there's been a lot of questions around death cases that we have seen post-vaccination. And that's also, the statistics are available on our website, and anyone can go and view that. And we explain the difference between an adverse event and an adverse effect. And so there is a lot of
children.
There's a lot that we have done in terms of educating, but we can never say we've done enough. We've okay. done radio.
No, but the answer can't be that I must go on their website. I'm asking on this platform because I want them to say it on this platform in this meeting.
Chair, I'm still presenting. Can I continue? I haven't finished my response to that question, please.
Yeah, no, please answer the questions. The other things are not important. Just answer the questions.
Let's allow Dr. Semete, and we would hope that your question will be answered.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. We have asked for allowance, please, to go into detail. I've also indicated that we were requested to present the strategic plan and the APP. And I've been very clear that the numbers, we will not have all of them at this moment, because what we were asked to present is what we have gotten. My colleague Portia will come in later, she's getting the exact numbers, and I'm still presenting, thank you. So on the adverse effects, questions around awareness, as I've said, we've done webinars, we've done radio interviews, but you can never do enough. One of the areas that we have tried to do a lot more on is around doing these radio shows in our indigenous languages. So we've worked with some of our staff members to ensure that we reach communities that we typically would struggle to reach if we have these webinars in an English medium. There was a question in terms of the level of reporting of the IEFI or any adverse events for both the Janssen and the Pfizer vaccines that are being made available in the country at the moment. We're getting reports of close to 0.017% reports when we consider the number of vaccines that have already rolled out. Again, this information is available on our website. We share this information with the other colleagues on the African continent, and this number is well within what they are also observing. So this is the percentage of reports that we've seen. If I can go to the exact numbers, I just want to look at a document now. So for the COVID, for the Pfizer vaccine, we had about IEFs reported of about 5,500, and for the Janssen, so in total there's about 5,500 reports. For Pfizer, it was 4,300 or so, and for Janssen, it was 1,300. This then resulting in the percentage that I have indicated to yourselves. Regarding the Pfizer report, we did indicate, we did engage with Pfizer, and we also engaged with the FDA. And what that report was is what we call a periodic safety report. So what
This meeting is being recorded.
So we put the public into this whole process and indicated what type of reports we have been getting from Pfizer. But we still say, based on the data that we have and the periodic safety report presented to us, the benefits of vaccines continue to outweigh the risks. The risks are there, and those risks are articulated. Those risks are also articulated to the healthcare professionals. I'll move to the question around, let me see, the Supreme Court. I was trying to finish all the COVID ones. There are quite a few. I'll see if I've covered all of those. I can always come back to those. In terms of the Supreme Court, so I think it must be, we must just clarify that SAPRA was not trying to shut down any industry. That's not the role of the regulator. As the regulator, as I've indicated earlier, our function is to ensure that every health product within our mandate that's available in the country is safe, is a quality product, and is effective, right? So what this ruling by the FCA says is that in our regulations, wherein we are defining what a complementary medicine is, our definition of a complementary medicine extends beyond what and how a medicine is defined in the Medicines Act. So basically the ruling says, narrow your definition sufficiently to ensure that you are adequately regulating those complementary medicines that are defined as medicines. And they are medicines as per the definition in the Medicines Act. And there is that definition that's captured in terms of it must be used to diagnose, to treat, to mitigate a disease, etc. And basically the ruling says you need to narrow the definition. So the ruling doesn't say do not regulate the sector because it will be completely incorrect. I think this judgment has been made available in the public through various fora. If you look at it, you will see it clearly says that medicines need to be regulated and that SAPRA needs to ensure that the definition only caters for those that are medicines. And those that are not catered for as medicines, there are other entities that would then regulate that. So we do have an act of the Foodstuffs and Cosmetics Act, and so those would then fall under that. So it doesn't mean there's not going to be regulation. It states that who then and under which act is that area going to be regulated. So no intention to shut down any industries whatsoever. It is to ensure that the public has safe products that they are able to access. So that addresses the two questions that we had. So what this court ruling says, again, was very clear that we have within the next 12 months, the regulations that we have still stand, and we then have 12 months to amend those regulations. But again, it's a court decision that we can appeal as a regulator. So we're currently consulting with our legal team, and they will then, and once we have concluded on that, we will communicate with the public, you know, and industry what the way forward would be here. If I can just talk to some questions asked around the APP per se in terms of the vision, mission, these were captured in the actual Word document, but we're happy to then include those in this document. I'm going to maybe ask my colleagues to just maybe let me ask Portia to come and address the questions around the COVID numbers, then I'll come back as I've just gone through these notes just to make sure that I've addressed all the other questions, then we'll take our HR executive and our CFO. Portia, do you want to come in, please?
Thank you, CEO. Good afternoon, honorable members. Good afternoon, Chair. With regards to the question that was asked on COVID-19 related products that talked to vaccines and therapeutics and also including PPEs and the test kits. I'll start with regards to the vaccine applications. We have received about 10 of those and I'll just go through those ones. We have received one Sinovac CoronaVac, which we have approved through Section 21. We've also received one COVID-19 vaccine, Covovax. This one is still under review. It was recently submitted to SAPRA. And we've also approved Pfizer Comirnaty. This was approved under Section 21. And we have also recently given it the conditional registration. And we also have given conditional registration to the J&J vaccine. And we have also approved the AstraZeneca, the SSI Chadox that was in January 2021. That was the Section 21 approval that was granted then. And we also have two Sinopharm vaccine applications. The one was given conditional registration on the 31st of January 2022. That was the MC Pharma one. And the second one is at the very advanced stage of review or finalization. And we've also received
This meeting is being recorded.
We also have an application that which is Lagevrio, which contains molnupiravir. This one we have approved through Section 21 on the 15th of February 2022. We also received application for interferon alpha 2b, which was not recommended or not approved, as the data submitted did not support the therapeutic claim. And we also have another application, Cordavir. That one was also not approved, as the data submitted, there was no data submitted to support the therapeutic claim. And we also had several applications for ivermectin that we approved through the Ivermectin Controls Compassionate Use Program. And this, we have received various, applications with using various trade names, ranging from Alice, Parakil, Stromectol, Ivermectin Tablets, USP. And we also have received an application for Nitazoxanide. This one is under review. And we also received several applications for Remdesivir. And this came through, using various names called, GBR, Cypremi, Remdenil, Desrem, Convifor, and this we approved, and we have also subsequently registered, Remdesivir for COVID-19 treatment, and we also have Favipiravir application, which was rejected as no data to support the therapeutic claim was submitted. And the next one was the convalescent plaza, which was submitted and rejected due to no data to support the therapeutic indication. And lastly, we had an application for medicinal cannabis that is using the trade name for leaf critical kush dried and cannabis flower. And there was, various names that were used for this particular application, and was also rejected due to lack of data to support the therapeutic claim. And with regards to the PPEs, we have not rejected any PPE applications coming our way. And the antigen test kits, we have received about 141 applications. We have approved 82. And rejected 59, and those that are still under, with the NHLS are 5. And reason for rejection is that they did not meet the performance specifications or failed performance with the NHLS, and in some cases there were insufficient documentations that were submitted. And with regards to the antibody test kits, we have received about 227, and we have approved 54. And we have rejected 173, and then those that are still with NHLS is 4, and then the reason for rejection is the same as I've indicated above. And for molecular testing, we have received about 148, and we have approved 122 and rejected 26. And then the total that's still with NHLS that is still undergoing testing is about 2. I think those are the status. Thank you.
I just want to just add on the few other questions that I speak to. There were questions around the surgical mesh, around the surgical mesh product. We did provide a report, I think, after the last meeting that we had with the portfolio committee, and I hope that the member did receive it, but we did share that report. If not, let us know. We're happy to reshare it. I do not have details today. As I said, I didn't prepare to engage on this matter, but at our next meeting, I can give an update. Regarding ivermectin, indeed, we had said that we will continuously review, and that's what that's exactly what we have done. A number of you may have noted the studies that were purporting to indicate that ivermectin is effective that have subsequently been recalled because the data was fraudulent. And so we have looked at all of that, and there's more studies that have come out that have indicated that ivermectin does not have a clinical benefit. So we don't have that situation, as we were saying earlier, of a clinical equipoise. We've reviewed this, we've engaged with our experts internally, and are now engaging with our legal team because we do need to consider the court ruling on this matter, and we will be communicating on an outcome on ivermectin quite soon. The other question was around the ML4. I must say we haven't obtained ML4 at this point. It's our plan for 2024-2025. We aim to achieve ML3 in this financial year. And the notes on the three pillars will indeed be provided, but they're also in the actual Word document of the APP that was shared through the Department of Health.
If I could just reflect on our work on regulatory compliance, I think we've got quite a number of questions there. So what we typically do when we get a report, and we would get reports through, we have a whistleblowing facility that the public can utilize to report any illicit use of medicines. And so, or they could email us, and at times they call our offices. And so we would send our inspectors to go and assess the facility or the establishment that's making these products available. Typically, we would go with the South African police services because we don't know what to expect for the safety of our team. And so when one is found to be non-compliant, you know, on the spot, we then investigate the matter. And once we've investigated, we hand it over to the police services. You may have noted that the individuals with the most recent one in the Western Cape have been arrested because it was very clear they were not licensed. They didn't have a responsible pharmacist at the facility. So on the spot, they were then detained. So working with the police services, then we're able to conclude on these matters. And then we hand it over to the police services for further sanctions. In terms of participating with other BRICS regulators, we have indeed been working with a number of them. We've got an MOU in place with Anvisa, that's our counterpart in Brazil. We also have, particularly from an area of inspectorate, with our counterpart in Russia and India and China also. We have been working over the years with them as regulators. We also, all of us work together through the international fora wherein we are all represented. So we work with the BRICS counterparts, but also with the other regulators on the African continent. And then lastly, before I hand over to Gordon for the HR and then to Rehard, on the State Farmer, we did have engagements with them. I think the last one was around 2020, 2021. Wherein again, we were guiding them in terms of what the regulatory requirements would be for them to be compliant with the Medicines Act. I haven't had any recent engagements with them. So if there are any specific discussions that are to be held with them, I'm happy for you to refer them to us, and we would be happy to engage. I'll hand over to Gordon. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Dr. Tuni. Via you, Chair,
My name is Gordon Mtagati, and I will touch on the vacancy rate as well as the training and WSP. When it comes to the vacancy rate, first you need to understand that in our fit for purpose structure, we have 53 positions that are vacant and funded. Then we have 89 that are vacant but not funded. This gives us to the vacancy rate of 12%. And to have an organization that has so many vacancies, and especially the ones that are not funded, gives it a tough time to our employees. But that is the vacancy rate. And then when it comes to training, we had 17 community service graduates who were in the organization. And then those 17, we call them ComServes, community service, which is doctors and master's graduates who have finish their internship, and now for the community service, they come and work, et cetera. We, all of them, they graduated and finished their training program, et cetera. But for this new coming fiscal year, we cannot continue because, one, we do not have funds to continue with that program. And we want to the few funds that we have to direct them to the vacancies and try to recruit as much as possible. And then our employees within the organization have opportunities for training. They have their individual development plans that identify what is the gap that needs to be closed when it comes to training. Therefore, we do provide that training. And with the WSP, SAPRA, for the first time in the financial year that just ended, we registered with the AWCETA. We have our SWP, our workplace skills plan, and we have managed to submit for the first time in the past financial year. But overall, those are the answers to the questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. If I may respond to some of the finance questions. The first one was relating to the overview left out in the APP. So what you will see, there's an overview per program, or specifically on page 22 of the APP, the resource considerations there, and then it's broken down under each program, the financial or the budgets and the MPEF projections per program under program resource considerations. For example, page 32, I think that's in line with the National Treasury templates issued for completion of the APP. The next question was on the percentage reduction. I think that relates specifically to program two, the reduction there. That relates to the backlog clearance program, and you will see the reductions in 21-22 to 22-23 and then 23-24, and that's as the project comes to an end. It is a very specific project with dedicated resources for that project, so the impact, it will not have an impact on, well, business as usual operations in terms of that funding decrease. There was a question on why, or 33% for program one. So how our budget is structured, it is a centralized support budget. So there are high value items within the support budget or program one budget that provides overall support to all the programs. For example, your expenditure allocated for your office accommodation would be under program one, as well as legal fees, which is also a big budget item for us at this point in time. Other items such as the audit expenditure, data and communications, marketing. So that's why the 33% is high in relation to other programs. But the overall budget split is still the 67% across all the core units compared to the 33, which is a good balance to have. The other question is extra resources to advocate for, also touched into on the presentation. That's mainly in terms of our capacity constraints, our human resource capacity constraints that we have. It is the most expensive budget line item for us, and it would definitely make a significant impact if there's some form of bridging finance, so that SAPRA can be fully established, and together with that, just capital investment for adequate systems to bring us on par with other regulators and entities. There was a question on program three, that why the reduction? So what we noticed is in the development of the previous budgets, if you specifically look at slide 24 as well,
is that there was an overestimation for 21-22. And if you look at the actual revenue for 2021 and the projected revenue for 21-22, you can see it's more aligned. And the reason why the budget was overestimated in 2021-22 is mainly because a assumption that was used that a inspection would take, for example, 40 hours, which is the maximum hours, where in the real world, the average inspection, per inspection would take, let's say, 23 hours. So the budgets were just realigned to make that work and make sure that we do project correctly and we'll be able to meet those budget targets. There was a comment on reduction of deferred revenue, specific targets for that. So the reduction in deferred revenue mainly relates to the core units meeting their targets in terms of their turnaround times within 30 working days, within 150 working days, or 250 working days, whatever the case might be. So if those targets are achieved, that would, in effect, assist us with reducing our deferred revenue liability and increase our revenue turnaround time. There was another question on business operations or premises. I didn't fully catch the question. Apologies for that, but I guess it relates to our regional footprint and how that's impacted. So we do have regional offices in Cape Town and Durban with our head office in Pretoria. And there were new lease entered into in 2021 for head office. We used the Department of Health already existing contracts for our regional offices. Those are, one has expired by end of March 2022, and we have successfully replaced that premises through the tendering process, and then the Durban lease would be in May.
Four is things like the US FDA with huge resources. And we're looking at a level three, but we're looking at a level three where we would probably be one of only two regulators in the continent at the moment that would be level three for a whole number of things, because you're not just level three, but you're level three for this, level three for that. And what we would include would be vaccines, because we, one of the few regulators in the region that's been looking at regulation of vaccines for a considerable period. And just to say that another question that was asked is, how involved is the regulator, how relevant? The regulator isn't going to get involved with, you know, industry development. But what's important for industry is to have an effective regulator. We do know that one of the reasons that the mRNA hub was awarded to Cape Town was because SAHPRA is seen as a highly effective regulator. So, and we won't get industry growth unless we have a highly effective regulator. So one of the things I would like to say is, yep, we're making progress. Are we there? No. But if people are keen, and as we all are, to see industry grow locally, job creation, income generation, providing the needs for the region, etc. If that is where we want to go, we've got to then support the regulatory authority. And one of the biggest problems, as you've heard overarchingly, is a shortage of funds. And industry is quite rightly saying to the regulator, look, we're happy to pay you, but you've got to provide the service. So in order to provide the service, you've got to be fully instituted in terms of human resources, in terms of IT and technology. We need all of those things, and you've seen the costs attached to them. So we are talking to Treasury. We've highlighted this with the Minister. But if I were going to say something to the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee, you're right to hammer us. It's no problem at all, and we must give you these answers. But our appeal would be to say, we know where we're going. What we need is additional resources to get there. This won't only, and I've talked about industry, but it will also contribute to safety. Many of you have raised questions around safety, particularly around vaccine safety, which is high on people's agenda. If we're going to be able to do proper safety monitoring to the level that we would like, we've done it very, very intensively with a number of partners, including the department, including a ministerial committee on vaccine safety. We've done it very intensively for COVID vaccines, and we do it for all vaccines, but we want to strengthen that. Now, if we want to strengthen all of these things that also protect the public and ensure and give the public the surety that the medicines they have in all categories are safe and effective, then we need to be properly capacitated to do that. So our appeal would be to say to Parliament, to say to the Portfolio Committee, can you support us in actually our appeals to government? And I know the fiscus is so tight, but to see if we can get more funding. We've made huge progress in many, many areas, but in order to really sort of tip ourselves up into that next stage that we want to be, we need to be properly resourced. We have a business plan. We know how many staff we need and in what categories. And as you've heard, we don't have those staff. So we're asking people, as you were quite rightly saying, are we doing enough inspections? Are we regulating enough? Are we fast enough? If we want to hit that level, which we want to get to, we must be properly capacitated. So our appeal to the Portfolio Committee would be to support us in our attempts to raise additional funds. Then with time, what we can do is, as a highly effective regulator, then the fees will start to come in and the reliance on government would go down even more, which is definitely where we want to be. We would never want to be totally fee dependent, because the fear would be that you would be then too dependent on a commercial industry, and you always want to get that balance right about your sources of income. So that would be just sort of one thing. I think the other thing just to say is some of the areas that we've been asked about rest with other entities. So for example, the insurance fund that was set up for the COVID vaccines doesn't rest with SAHPRA. SAHPRA does the scientific evaluation together with the World Health Organization and other local entities, as Tumi explained. But the actual decision about that rests with the Department of Health and with the structures that the ministers put in place. Similarly, traditional medicines, SAHPRA doesn't regulate traditional practitioners. There's another entity that is responsible for that. The only time SAHPRA would become involved with traditional medicines would be if they were commercialized. And indeed, for example, University of Western Cape has an entity that's looking at whether some of the molecules in traditional medicines could be converted into commercial entities for local businesses. So, but that would be the only time we would get into that. And similarly, I think we also heard the mention of research. So SAHPRA doesn't do research. SAHPRA says to an applicant, please bring us the data. This is the data we need. And can you bring us this data? And it's then up to the applicant to do that research or to find that research and to bring it to the entity. But I'll stop there. And if we haven't answered, we'll be very happy to do so. But thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much, Professor Ellen Reed and Dr. Semete, for those replies. I have a note from Honorable Chirwa that asks that you send what you said you don't have to her in writing, maybe to give her a written reply. And I think before I just do a few announcements, maybe to get a final comment from yourselves. And then I'm going to make some announcements, and then we are going to close the meeting. Professor
Ellen, well, thank you very much. As I say, I really appreciate it. I think these were very insightful questions, the ones that I can see what people want to hear. You'd like to hear what's actually happened with COVID with all these applications. I mean, I think we could also think about almost having memos for you that sort of give you updates on really critical issues. We did have taken note of everything, and in fact did reply on the question of the vaginal film. And I'm surprised that didn't get through, but because we did actually discuss that and the importance of actually replying to a specific concern about safety. So that reply was sent, and we will make sure that the honourable member gets that reply. But just generally, if you could in any way help us in a very difficult financial situation, you've understood our appeal. If you can give us support to get more funding so that we can be properly staffed, we've already got a highly competent but limited regulatory authority for the reasons we've explained, we would greatly appreciate it. But thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We do agree, I do agree that we do have a wonderful regulatory authority. You would remember that I also raised the point of the sales of 5 and 6 drugs, which we have spoken about, which I didn't raise today. But we will talk about again. So well done to yourselves for having brought this organization to where it is now. And we will endeavor to do everything in our power to get you that support that you ask for. Thank you very much. Honorable members, just before I close, there have been requests for oversight visits. To KZN, been another request for physical contact meetings at the portfolio committee. The physical meetings, we must be reminded that those are requests which we have to make to Parliament to receive authorization for those. And having received the list of chambers which are available from Honorable Wilson, it's also noted that those are very small. But nevertheless, we will have a discussion on this, not today. And we will, as the committee secretary and myself, will write to the relevant authorities to hear what the regulations are with regards to having those physical, those meetings with physical attendance. And then we've all had our eye on the floods in KZN. We've noted the visit by the president and the ministers, and the declaration of a national state of disaster as a response to the flooding. We have also noted today the visit of the minister, the DM, the DG, to KZN, together with the MEC for the Provincial Department of Health, and other officials of the departments of the National Department of Health and the Provincial Department of Health of KZN. We've also noted the visit of government departments, and all of these as an intention to give support to the people of KZN. And we've also seen requests for assistance in various means and ways for the people who are destitute and struggling after these severe floods. But I also noticed the content of the briefing that the minister had done today, which speaks to the damages of the health facilities, the infrastructure, the effect of the service delivery, and the constitution of a health team of national and provincial department officials to address the challenges. I had then spoken with the chair of chairs, because the view was, my view was that we needed to give an opportunity for work to be done and repairs, assessments to be made and repairs to be instituted in order for services to be brought to the people very quickly and to be corrected. So the chair of chairs had informed me that there will be oversight visits by some portfolio committees, including the portfolio committee on health, but that we should really consider two or three things. One is that we do allow the departments to do their work, and that we are mindful of the leave period, which starts next week. And that we should rather hopefully postpone such a visit to probably the first week in May, in order for us to then also be able to assess the work that is being done, the plans which have been made, and you know, get an idea of the correction of the damages, so that services are provided to the people. And here we're talking specifically health, but of course we know that other services have also had some challenges with regard to the flooding. That is my my view. It's a view that I want to pass on to you, and we are fully mindful that we will be one of those portfolio committees which will be doing that oversight. drawing is concerned, it will go slightly on the back burner, considering that this oversight visit we will be instructed to make that oversight visit also by Parliament itself.
So
then on Friday, please do not forget, we're receiving the Department of Health to do their presentation on the APP and the budget for the financial year 2022 to 2023, which starts at 09:30 hours. And after the lead period on the 4th of May, very critically, first Wednesday, we are doing consideration on a option of our own committee's budget. With that having been said, honourable members, thank you very much for this meeting. We will be discussing further again on Wednesday the 4th as to any logistics that we need to, for any arrangements we need to make. This meeting is then adjourned. Thank you.
The recording has stopped.